Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of the Teen Wolf Unpacked podcast. I'm Morgan.
I'm Mitchell. We're two friends and film industry professionals who have a long-standing hobby of discussing film and TV in too much depth.
Each week we will discuss a new episode of the show, trying our best to remain spoiler-free while covering our favourite themes, tropes, and what we noticed as people who are sometimes employed on film crews.
This week we're discussing Season 1, Episode 8, Lunatic, written by Monica Mesa.
Yeah.
I'm getting really bad at pronouncing these writer names, and directed by Tim Andrew. It aired on the 18th of July 2011 to a viewership of 1.76 million. Oh, getting up there now.
This week's episode synopsis is, as Scott's second full moon approaches, he gives into his animal urges and hurts Styles. Does he? But Styles gets a measure of revenge in locking him up. Meanwhile, Jackson continues to try and get closer to Allison. The Argents learn that Scott somehow knew Derek.
Oh, yeah.
Just reading the synopsis, it feels weird that this is episode 8.
You reckon?
I don't know. Just like, I guess it like makes sense in that like clearly season one's timeline is sort of like one episode equals 1 week, or 1 week of time has passed between episodes.
But it wasn't for the last two episodes.
But yeah, the last two episodes were just like a period of 12 hours. But I guess that's what we're tracking with. Oh wait, no, that can't be right, because if Scott's first full moon was the first episode, then that was only theoretically a month before, like, this episode. Fuck knows what I'm trying to say. Look, the timeline.
Yeah, so the timeline makes no sense.
Yeah, no timeline, makey no sensey.
So it's been at least another month since the first episode on episode 8.
Yeah, apparently. Oh dear.
Good. I don't know why, but when you said his animal urges and hurts Styles, I was just like, I thought exactly the same thing. I was like, does he hurt Styles or
I mean, he kind of like emotionally hurt Styles, but like not, he doesn't physically hurt Styles.
That was where my brain went. I was just like, yeah, maybe emotionally. He hurts their friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, he
big
he
feels.
He kind of violates the bro code.
Absolutely.
In this episode, pretty bad.
Well,
I don't
maybe
like,
that is what the synopsis is talking about.
Maybe it would just kind of need some tweaking. I don't like Scott in this episode.
No.
Not that I think Scott was meant to be likable in this episode.
I can't remember the next episode very well, but how much does it change again in the next episode?
I think so. Yeah, I don't know. In my mind, this episode feels kind of like ticking off the motions. Like, okay, they don't have a lot of time. Like, you know, they don't have a lot of episodes this season. So they can't like spend an inordinate amount of time like working through Scott processing his breakup with Allison. And I guess we're tying in the werewolf thing. So he's having this like second, like this, the full moon thing, sorry. So he's got this secondary thing acting on his behavior, or like contributing towards his behavior.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of feel like this was, you know, I don't know. I wasn't vibing with this. Like, this Scott's annoying.
Yeah.
And he takes, like, he gets weirdly kind of cartoony with his bad boy wolf kind of mojo that he has going on in this episode. So, like,
We'll get
this.
into that through the length of this
Yeah.
podcast.
Yeah. Like, I know it's meant to be the werewolf. I guess it's meant to be the werewolf side of him acting. But it's just like we haven't seen any other werewolf act like that. So it's.
That's true. Although, could you claim some of it's because of like the influence of the alpha or something?
Yeah,
Although we haven't really
maybe.
seen anything of like the alpha controlling him other than to turn him. Oh, the last episode we did have him decide that he was going to kill his friends until he heard Allison.
Yeah, and I suppose he didn't go like frenzied on that. He did kind of go into this weird, like, stalky kind of behavior, which does kind of track with this, like, weird fuck you behavior that his wolf seems to make him do this episode. But yeah, we should get into
Get
it.
into it.
This episode opens in like on a big rock. I don't know, like some
How
sort of hilltop.
is this like the lookout of the town or something? Like the troped lookout of the whole little town of Beacon Hills?
I don't know. To me, like as a climber, this looked like the top of a crag.
That's true. Well, that's why I'm wondering if it's like a lookout or something. I'm like, is this the like makeout point or something like that? But yeah, we also don't really see a cliff, so it just seems to be a big piece of rock.
I should have taken note of the sign, because if it said like Beacon Hills Preserve, then isn't he in basically Derek's backyard?
Maybe.
Maybe, but either way, start. We open wherever this big rock place, lookout, makeout point, possibly the Beacon Hills Reserve is. We open with Scott and Stiles, and Scott's kind of being a mopey little dude, and
He's
Styles,
heartbroken.
yeah,
His girlfriend has broken up with him.
he's heartbroken and slightly delusional about his breakup with Allison being an actual breakup, and Styles is being a good friend and is basically like, we drink Jack Daniels.
You know what you do when your girlfriend breaks up with you. Your best friend takes you to get drunk. Apparently that's the correct option.
Is apparently the correct option. Which mostly just means Styles getting drunk.
Because Scott very quickly finds out that he can't get drunk anymore.
He doesn't like actually say anything in this scene though, like, does he? He can't get drunk. He might.
Styles does ask. He
Oh,
goes,
yeah.
"Are you feeling anything?" And Scott's just like, "Nah, not at
Uh-uh.
all."
Yeah, I think I have a note. Oh yeah, I do have a note on that. It's my note is that's a kind of a shitty trade-off that you just can never get intoxicated.
I was watching a review of the She-Hulk TV series
Oh.
before, and of all things, and well, apparently one of the things of that was, as a Hulk, you can't get drunk, but you can still get buzzed,
Oh.
which I'm like, that sounds better.
I mean, it doesn't 100% make sense that you can't get like this is a trope of like any kind of supernatural superhero TV show. Like Superman can't get drunk, werewolves can't get drunk. And I've seen the logic used in werewolf things, and I'm guessing this is just like fan canon, but like I guess people presume that, like, pr presume the logic to be that your metabolism is so high, so your body just processes it too fast for the effects to take effect. But what you already know that like werewolves can be affected by a chemical substance. So like theoretically, there's a way for Scott to get drunk. Or if he could physically swallow enough liquor fast enough, like at some point you have to be able to outpace your body.
Yeah. Or is that just a thing of like, I don't know, the drunkenness goes through his body so quickly and like the way his body deals with the chemicals that affect him is not the same way as getting drunk or...
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, you could do your head in trying to... There's many like supernatural or superhero like other than human type things that like you just have to suspend disbelief on because if you don't, one, it's just a ridiculous conversation. I haven't had too many of those ridiculous conversations, but every time I see one crop up online, I definitely like feel the need to look at them.
Yeah.
And it both amuses me and also makes me like want to bash my head against a wall.
Fair enough. Oh dear. And we just have
Styles, however, is fucked.
Yeah, this is just the theme for Styles for this and for a good portion of this episode, right? Is just his obsession with Lydia, right? We really get to explore that.
Maybe there was some online immediate, like online pickup of Styles and Derek, and this is them bouncing hard into the Styles likes girls thing.
Yeah.
Because they do kind of like bounce pretty hard into this. Like,
yeah.
We haven't really had too much of it previously. Like, in the first couple of episodes, there is that like quintessential, like, you know, like line where Styles is like, hey, Lydia, and you're ignoring me type thing.
Yeah.
You know, there is that like fixation, but then it kind of like falls by the wayside and now it's coming back with a vengeance because,
yeah.
I mean, Styles is literally lying down just going, I love girls, especially ones with like strawberry blonde hair, and it's like, ugh.
It'll be interesting if we see that continue going forward, that real written idea that Styles is into girls, to try and keep reinforcing the point to really decide if it is a reaction to what was happening online at the time or something like that.
Yeah, we'd have to go back and look at the influencing material. Mm. And also like there's some Comic-Con stuff you can look at. I definitely will be doing it. I've seen it. I'll go back and get some dates. But yeah, my personal headcanon is that Styles is bi. Cannot tell me otherwise.
I know. He spent two episodes asking if gay men find him attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. But either way, he's like silly drunk.
I just enjoyed him going on about how no one wants to be alone.
Yeah. And Scott is super moody. Like he's the moodiest motherfucker ever. And
he's just moody this entire episode.
Yeah.
Like,
also, they've like presumably drunk about half a bottle, like half a liter of Jack Daniels. Styles would be like having alcohol poisoning.
Well, supposedly Scott has tried to have some as well, right?
True.
So they've at least shared the bottle.
True, but still.
Yeah, that's half a bottle.
I mean, he's still definitely like pretty drunk, but
yeah.
Styles has some seriously flawed but very teenage logic of like being broken up with hurts, but being alone is worse. And it's like, no, Styles, that's called codependency. You should be comfortable being with yourself. Except you're a teenager. Like
he's not alone because he's spending time with Scott. So it's like, yeah, you can still, I don't know, can't you still find comfort in your friends too?
Well, this is what Styles would inevitably learn as he ages and grows wiser and whatever, all of that shit. That stuff. But that is like such a teenage perspective. Like, oh my God, I got broken up with. It's the worst thing in the world. I mean, Scott does kind of just look like the long-suffering friend who has to deal with, like, sober friend who has to deal with a drunk person, which
with his werewolf powers is now forever apparently going to be his role.
Yeah, that's his role in life. He solidified it's fucked. Oh, man. Sorry, Scott. But anyway, these two random dudes interrupt their drinking session and somehow swipe the bottle. And, I mean, they're pretty antagonistic, but Scott just, like, gets, like, serial Scott killer vibes going.
Yes. That, this is my thing of just, that continues this entire episode. He's just moody and grumpy.
Yeah, he gets, like, super loose with his werewolfness as well, because he, like, kind of glows his eyes. And his voice gets super weird.
I was trying to decide with this, like, deep controlling werewolf voice. Is it like, yes, if I sound more aggressive, then I can get people to do what I want. Oh.
Yeah, is it just like the shift changes your, like, vocal cord structure so the voice gets deeper, or is Scott trying to, like, influence people? Is this like the Force where he's like, you will give me the bottle back? You don't know.
I mean, it seems to work pretty well.
Yeah, probably because this guy is like, okay, you seem unhinged.
I can't deal with crazy.
Yeah, and he, like, steals the bottle back and lobs it, like, into a tree. Styles is looking, like, remarkably sober as they leave this situation, but at least they're safe and Styles doesn't drive.
I don't know. He does collapse, and Styles does collapse into the seat of his Jeep, so I don't know how sober he is.
Yeah, that's true. Good thing they don't drink and drive, though. Yes. And we stay with the doobie-smoking man and his friend, and just see them get swiped from, like, corner frames. And we see the alpha's hand, so I guess we're expecting it to be an alpha or something. I don't know. Like, well, we see what it looks like, the alpha's hand.
The way Scott was unhinged, it was suggestive that it could have been Scott, but...
Was it? He was just with Styles.
Yeah, but Styles was saying, you know, don't go. What are you doing? Don't go back and hurt those guys or something like that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the alpha as well.
It was super freaking dark that he just, like, dumps him into, like, a fire barrel.
Yeah,
like, that's really, really dark. Like, up until this point, like, well, we kind of know that the killings have had some sort of pattern, even though we don't, like, really know, but we've seen Styles investigating it a bit, and the people have all seemed to know, like, either about the Hales or Derek, or, you know, there's been some sort of connection that you can draw, but, like, to the best of, like, you know, your knowledge in this scene, it, like, this is just some random punk, like, being a dick and in the woods, and then, like, he gets dumped upside down in a fire barrel.
It's
grim as fuck. But, and you get this, like, I mean, one, putting a person inside a fire barrel doesn't accelerate fire like how it does in the shot. But anyway, they use the shot to mask the transition, the fire to mask the transition into the.
Yeah, we don't know what happened to him. Oh, no, we do see legs in the fire barrel.
Yeah, that's how you know he's upside
down. Okay, that's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, that's how you know it's upside down. And then you get the werewolf in the full moon in the corner, and then to title card.
Yeah. Like, the full moon is coming.
Yeah. And after the title card, we wake up with Scott's alarm, his radio alarm. That's.
Did you ever have a radio alarm?
I did. My parents also had radio alarms. I have, like, deep memories of a, like, that's just a thing that, like, Zoomers are never going to
My father still
remember.
Has a radio alarm.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, neither, my parents don't, and I don't. Like, everyone just uses an iPhone alarm now, or a phone, a phone alarm, or like a hub, a Google hub, or Alexa, or insert smart device here. Yeah, Zoomers will never know the sound of, like, the breakfast show host's voice waking you up in the morning for years on end.
I've never had one, or I'm pretty sure I've never had one. I might have at some stage of when I've stayed somewhere or something like that. But yeah, for the most part, I've never actually had one. I don't know. It sounds like a slightly more pleasant way of waking up.
Yeah. I haven't had one for a long time, but I used to. We hear on the radio that that Beacon Hills High School was closed for a couple of days following the murder of such and such, and Derek is still on the run.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this scene is just Scott's mum coming in to turn off the alarm and just be like, "Are you okay? You don't have to go back to school. Are you all right?" Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, she's coming in to be ultimate good mum vibes here.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really caring, and Scott's, I mean, Scott's in like a more of a depressive mood this morning, but I did laugh how Melissa wasn't really tolerating his shit. Like, she was kind of like poking a little fun at him.
Yeah. But that's just constantly reflective of their relationship too, isn't it? It's kind of great.
Yeah, Scott's very like one track minded as well. He's just like, "I'm gonna get her back."
Yeah.
We're not talking about the alternative here.
Sure.
Yeah. And next we see Chris, Kate, and Allison dropping Allison's getting dropped off at school.
And poor Chris doesn't seem to like the idea.
Yeah, Chris is being like overprotective. Kate's kind of like poking fun at him. I didn't really have too many notes on the scene, aside from the fact that like Kate's kind of, both Kate and Chris are like in their own ways amusingly long suffering.
It's very amusing. My note for this scene was kind of just, I found it amusing.
I mean, I guess you do get the sense that maybe Chris is relying on Kate a little bit more, like, you know, he's sort of acknowledging that maybe she was right where he was wrong previously, even though that's poor logic. Like, don't ever listen to a homicidal maniac. It's a terrible idea. But he's, this event with the Alpha, obviously they understand the context way more than like the police department does.
Yeah.
He's now kind of like bringing Kate in, like trusting her logic and her guidance, and her like presence in Allison's life a little more.
I mean, she is still his sister, like, although maybe that also means that he's, you'd think that he's more aware of who she is as a person as well. But
Well, I guess like you don't know like the age gap between them and stuff like that. Like, Kate's implied to be more like Allison's sister, so maybe she's meant to be
quite a lot younger.
Yeah, maybe at least like 10 to 15 years younger than Chris.
Yeah.
So maybe he wouldn't traditionally see her as like an authority figure and or like a person to like listen to instead of himself, but like he's definitely kind of running with he's more amenable to her logic after the Alpha holding his kid hostage in the school,
which I suppose that makes sense. Does that mean he he was hurt by the fact that that happened. And yeah, well, he obviously is, the fact that he doesn't really want to let her out of the car. He's like, nah, I want to protect my little girl.
Yeah, he's got an appreciation for what the police don't understand.
Yeah.
And Kate's basically just like smarmy.
Yeah.
I don't like Kate.
No. I just wrote, yeah, that's what she was going to say about the gas.
Totally.
After Chris just defended himself. And then we get Lydia and Allison walking through the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Fashion comment. I think Allison's jacket and dress look great together. I think the bigger question is Lydia's leopard print skirt. Is that?
Yeah. dear.
But maybe leopard that's print. More reflective of the time.
Yeah. Well, leopard print's kind of making a comeback.
Is it?
I think so. I don't know. I don't understand.
I'll run and hide.
I don't understand this fashion. I do feel like that the 2010s period was a weird time in fashion.
Yeah.
Because I feel like post 2013.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit earlier. That's when like 80s trends started coming back. And then like ever since then we've sort of phased through like 80s trends, 70s trends. Now we're in the 90s, like now we're in the Y2K era.
Yeah.
So it's like we just went through this weird period of like fashion in that time, and then we've hit a reset and gone backwards.
Well, this is still Allison is definitely still in a leather jacket, which I did know you commented about a couple episodes ago about everybody wearing leather jackets. So
yeah, you know. Yeah, I think leather jackets were pretty in. I owned a leather jacket around this time, I believe.
Never owned a leather jacket, although I kind of want to because I do like the idea of a leather jacket. I have no idea what I'd put it with, but anyway.
Oh, dear. But basically, they're just like, yeah, I don't know. We get some more commentary on the Scott situation, which is just like reinforcing why Allison doesn't trust him.
Yeah.
And Lydia's like backing up that logic, which is sound logic. Like, it does make sense. But I guess, you know, as the audience, we know the context for those, for the decisions that Scott made.
Yeah.
We then cut to Styles sitting outside the principal's office where the sheriff has been talking. And we learn that Derek is in the wind.
Still can't find him.
Yeah.
So he really just was like, there's an alpha in the school chasing these kids, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave.
I think it's a plot hole, eh? Like, they obviously didn't, like, get Hecklin for that episode.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't film. If they didn't have him for that episode, then they couldn't film anything to contextualize what happens to him. So they're just, like, writing it off as, like, not important. But it kind of is, because he got, like, maimed,
yeah,
to the point where he was presumed dead, and then now he's just like up in the
disappeared
wind.
Yeah. Entirely. No one knows where he is. I mean, I suppose we don't know yet that he's coming back, so maybe like you could say Styles and Scott have been like, maybe the alphas like cleaned up his body and things, but also then where's his car? Like,
yeah. Well, they also don't talk, like, it would make sense if maybe they presumed that he was dead, and then that the alpha had taken him. But like, yeah. even if they were still presenting to the police department that he was in the wind, because he's been accused of these like the murders and shit. But Scott and Styles and that, like, never talk about, like, Derek being dead in this episode, I don't think. Like, they just also go straight to the assumption that he's, like,
disappeared, yeah.
Disappeared or hiding or whatever, which I don't know. That kind of seems strange to me.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, but Styles is basically just like pleading with his father to be careful, and the sheriff says that they've brought in like a specialist.
Experts, yeah.
Yeah, like some sort of state detective. Who we later find out who he actually like, well, not who he actually is, but like what he is actually is. And yeah, it's I guess it's test time in chemistry. Is that what Harris?
Yeah,
he's, Harris is the chemistry teacher.
Harrison's a chemistry teacher, right?
Yeah.
This is what I wrote. I was just like, chemistry test?
Yeah.
25% of your grade by putting your name on the test seems generous.
I know. 25% of your grade for one test seems generous.
This is true. This teacher is so negative towards the students.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, let's get the disappointment over with. Oh, dear.
Which this is, I think I saw it on the tidbits actually, on the trivia. It's like actually an econ test.
Yeah, I was just looking at the questions going like, they sound something about economics when this is meant to be a chemistry teacher. But anyway.
I mean, I guess like any teacher can oversee any test really, like as just a supervisor, but still. Scott's basically just like stressing, and my note for this scene is like, this is an interesting metaphor for why it's a bad idea to tie your sense of self to another person.
Yeah. Yeah, because he has nothing grounding him anymore.
Yeah, now he's just like falling apart.
Which is what this whole episode illustrates is, yeah, yeah, literally why it's a bad idea to tie himself to another person.
Yeah. Those are some interesting fake tests that the art department had to make. Will you kill, yeah, A, all of your friends, B, none of your friends?
I did find that amusing.
And yeah.
Scott just ends up getting into just a state of sensory overload of just hearing and seeing everything and
yeah, just
getting out of there and leaving.
Styles is at least like a good friend and goes... Like Scott leaves the room and then yeah, Styles follows him out straight away. Like, he's looking out for him. And he finds him in, the shower, in the bath, like in the locker room.
As is like stress relief, which I actually kind of enjoyed that. I was just like,
yeah,
it seems like a nice way to deal with it.
Yeah, my note is like, I do understand the urge to drown yourself in the shower when you're sort of having like anxiety or stress.
Yeah.
But my follow up note to that is, but you should probably take your pants off.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're just underwear or something. We can't quite tell. Oh no, they are very much pants.
Yeah, he's in jeans.
I can see the belt loops.
And Scott's like basically, he's like hyperventilating and stressing out, and Styles gives him his inhaler, which helps. And then, yeah, you get like the first mention of Styles' experience with like panic attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you learn that it's that Styles' experience comes from his own personal experience from experiencing them after his mom died.
Yeah. So he was able to help Scott by trying to distract him from his panic attack.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He likens it, like Styles like attributes it to heartbreak, which I don't. Yeah, I don't know if heartbreaks can cause panic attacks. I suppose like technically anything can cause a panic attack.
I suppose really I couldn't speak to any of it, but it's like, it's just your brain overthinking things to such a point that that you end up panicking about it and go running into like a state of information overload and things like that, which we saw depicted with Scott. But yeah, again, I couldn't really speak to any of it. I suppose that's at least as an audience what we're meant to assume.
Yeah, well, like
I suppose that makes sense.
I mean, it makes sense why he's like struggling. His reasons for struggling make sense and are like, it's not hard to like empathize with Scott in the situation, especially like at this point in the story, when like this is kind of, I guess, like the more, this is like the experience his human side is having. I don't know, my understanding of panic attack is like, yeah, not quite in line with the show logic, but it's still understandable and like nice that like Styles is able to like easily empathize and like help him out and stuff.
Yeah, and it's showing how close they are.
Mm.
And we get the combination of the ideas that the full moon is like enhancing Scott's werewolf powers and things like that, and that in combination with his breakup with Allison is sending everything into overload.
Yeah, it's like
at the moment
it's like 10xing all of his experiences,
problems and issues. Yeah,
we also find out that they're still working on the logic that Deaton is the alpha.
Yeah.
So that's still playing in the background.
Styles is very locked onto the idea that it's Deaton because Styles doesn't have any other evidence to the contrary, which is fair enough.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess we're back in Chris's garage, although his garage is looking mighty different.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It is.
I think my note is like, what part of Chris's garage is this? And how is he in with state people? Or do the Argents have registered offices and this is their registered office, like place of business?
Is it garage or is it like his office in the house or something like that?
Yeah, I don't
know. It's a
pretty
big house.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like a garage, but then the gun cabinetry is kind of similar to what we saw in the garage.
Yeah.
And there's,
and I suppose that doesn't mean they couldn't have multiple gun cases or something like that. But
yeah,
this is
true.
Where we get to see the what were they, state troopers or state police or something, that
like the state
Styles'
detective.
Dad, yes, yeah, state detective that Styles' dad had called in. Know the Argents of the local werewolf hunters.
Yeah, like basically, it's like the Argents are infiltrating the police.
Yeah.
In some way or another. And they're coming up with like a game, like this game plan to catch the alpha. And Kate says this line, like one of the Chris's goons asks about Derek, which is like the first, is it? It's kind of the first mention we're getting of Derek. He asks like, what about Derek? Is Derek going to be out tonight? And Kate says he's smarter than that. He won't, like, we're not going to find him out tonight. So it's like now they're presuming that he's alive.
Yeah.
Although I guess they weren't there to experience him getting fucked up. So maybe they just don't know that he got fucked up by the alpha. And so they're just presuming that nothing's happened to him. He's on the run because Scott and Styles have dumped him in it. And he's definitely going to stay home tonight.
I mean, so you'd hope that Allison has told her father that, like, it was Derek who was chasing them in the school or something like that. Like, Derek was a serial killer or whatever story. You know, the story that, that Scott spun, Allison, Jackson, and Lydia. I'm assuming they're assuming Derek is alive from that.
Yeah.
Well,
I just wonder, like, the only people that theoretically know that Derek was attacked is Scott and Styles.
Yeah.
Like, the others don't know about it.
And these people from out of state obviously know who Derek is. He's a known werewolf in the area.
And you get like
okay. So then we get Mummy Argent come out with cookies and say, yeah, if you find Derek out, then you find him and you kill him because he hurt my little girl. Supposedly. So does that
She doesn't even say that. Like, she just says, you find him, you kill him, you cut him in half. Does anyone want a cookie?
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't even need the reason that he, like, because he, like, they already know that Derek's not the alpha. So they know that Scott and Styles created the story of him being a serial killer to, like, they know that it was the alpha in that situation. Logically, at least. So they're just like in full werewolf hunting mode. They're like, over all of, there's no more Mr. Nice Guy. They're like, you see him out, you fuck him off.
Yeah.
Does anyone want a cookie?
but Kate's already done that, right? When she, like,
yeah,
got him with the cattle prod and kicked him out of his own house.
I mean, but Kate's like, the art, like, Chris and Victoria are just kind of like straight up like on the werewolf murdering mission, whereas Kate's got like, let me play with my food kind of vibes.
Yeah, like proper maniacal evil.
Like, I feel like if you were to narrate Kate's experience, you would be Zazu in The Lion King, coming in, seeing Scar playing with the mouse and being like, didn't somebody ever tell you not to play with your food?
Apparently not.
Yeah.
Kate never got that talk.
Kate likes playing with her food.
Yes.
And we cut to a scene with Jackson and Allison.
Yes.
Yeah, my only note for the scene is Jackson is gross. Like, who the fuck does that?
Yeah.
He like reaches over. Allison's eating, I guess, her mom's cookie. He's eating her mom's cookie there and has like chocolate on her mouth, and Jackson like wipes it off and sticks it in his mouth. And I'm like, that's like fucked up. No, you could not do that in high school without sending someone into like a weirded out frenzy.
But Allison is apparently all for it.
Yeah, apparently she's like, this is fine. You just touch my face, then put it in your mouth. Ew. I'm like, clearly these people did not grow up in the era of meningococcal B.
Yeah.
Even though they also very clearly did. By their age.
Quite. I just wrote that this is the continuation of Jackson playing Mr. Nice Guy, or trying to.
He's just keeping on with his plan. He's kind of becoming a bit like unhinged with it, though.
Although he doesn't. Well, maybe that's like he actually kind of enjoys it or something like that. I don't know, but he doesn't exactly play it with Scott either. Like. And Allison is supposedly broken up with him at this point. So it's like, how is he actually meant to get any information out of her at this point if they're not together anymore? So, like, how is Allison still useful to him? But maybe he's just expecting them to get back together or something.
Or he just, like, expects actually, that she would know some sort of, like, you know, has some sort of knowledge still. Scott's just like unhealthy right now.
This is just Derek, Jackson, very happy that Allison has broken up with him. So I'm like, this is a very entertaining scene with Scott trying to, with Coach reading out who's gone to front line.
First line, not a war. Yeah, we're in like the locker room now, and I guess for some reason some players have moved up to first line. There's no reason for that. Explosiva.
No, it was Greenberg created a epidemic of pink eye.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. All right. There's an epidemic of pink eye going around, of all things.
So they created something just to make an entertaining scene, perhaps.
Yeah.
And to create more conflict between Jackson and Scott.
Yeah. And yeah, Styles makes first line. And yeah, my note is just like, Styles is way too excited.
He is over the moon, but it's
Yeah.
great too. I think it plays very well.
Yeah, he's like ludicrous. And they're also going to co-captaincies with Scott and Jackson.
And Jackson is just shocked by this news.
Yeah, the co-captaincy thing doesn't really make sense.
I
Like,
think, if anything, it's just to
it's
create
just a.
more conflict between them.
Yeah, it's just to piss Jackson off.
But as to why it happens, I don't know.
Yeah. I liked how Danny is at least a voice of reason in
Yeah,
this.
going like, why are you being such a dickhead, Jackson?
Yeah. He's just like, get over yourself. Whatever we can do to win the game, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we need to actually work together as a team, and perhaps we should use the strengths of the players that we have in our team to do as well as we can. Like, that would make logical sense.
Yeah.
But Jackson doesn't live in a place of logic and sense,
No.
apparently.
And we get like this. We get this scene between Scott and Styles where they're walking like to practice or whatever, and Scott says like that he could like practically smell the jealousy, which is how we then learn that werewolves can smell desire and whatever. Yeah, that's like almost a that's almost like a little cringe how Styles like fishes for this information.
Styles just gets on to this line of questioning where he just decides that Scott should be able to find out if Lydia likes him or not, and it's just a bit weird. And I'm just like, I mean, what? They did this to create a conflict between Scott and Styles, but it's like, why did they have to go about it this way?
Yeah.
I
Styles
feel
might
there
be
is.
getting like a bit ahead of himself with like his progress to first line and like these things moving. He's like, he's got no real reason to believe that Lydia would have any interest in him, but
That's fair enough. The over-the-head shot for Scott asking Lydia if they can have it, if they can talk, is interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, makes. Does it add to the awkwardness of like what Styles is supposedly meant to be asking Allison until we find out that he's actually going to ask him about Lydia, about Allison?
Yeah, I can't say I like thought too much about that over the head shot. Other than just like, to keep things visually sort of different or interesting. But yeah, like you say, like Scott basically just uses the interaction with Lydia to ask if Allison is like missing him, talking about him, like et cetera, et cetera. Needy boyfriend things.
And then I was trying to decide if this is still Lydia going into like full manipulation mode or.
I think the thing I realized is like everyone's kind of shitty in this episode. Like Lydia's like acting in a way that's like, one could sabotage her friendship with Allison. I don't particularly think she cares if she sabotages her relationship with Jackson. She, in fact, might be intentionally trying to get a dig in at Jackson by, like,
especially with how much Jackson is talking to Allison now. Like,
yeah, she might deliberately be trying to hurt him.
We've had a lot of reaction shots of Lydia clearly seeing that Jackson is taking more of an interest in Allison, and her being clearly grumpy or pissed off or annoyed about it.
So
maybe that's where this comes from.
Basically, just strange. Everyone's just shitty.
Yeah.
In this episode, like,
this is not a just not a nice episode for just people treating each other right.
Yeah, no one's good, and Scott's getting like super weird. Like, he's having like these really like kind of extreme reactions to like anything about Allison being told to him.
Do you know who wins the best character award in this episode for being a good person?
Who?
Danny.
Yeah, Danny wins. Danny's like the only person who's not being shitty.
Yeah.
Maybe Danny's immune to the full moon.
Maybe. Styles been shitty? Yeah, he has, hasn't he?
Yeah, even Styles is kind of being shitty because he's being weird. Well, he's being
weird about Lydia and
he's being obsessive about Lydia. Well, it's like fine to be excited that he's made first line, but he is being super obsessive and like locked on to Lydia, and then later on, because of what happens in the scene, he goes on to be like shitty to Scott because Scott's shitty to him. The scene basically culminates in Lydia like sort of reeling Scott in with this like backwards logic of like. Like, you know, she thinks that she knows that Scott did what he did in the school to save them. And she thinks that you should be grateful for that rather than just, I mean, taking it as a thing that doesn't require, like, payment to show gratitude. Just a sense of gratitude for being alive might be fine.
Yeah.
And so they make out.
Yeah, which is where her logic for making out with him comes from, but
yeah, and the dialogue's just like gross, and Scott's got serial killer eyes, and
I know he really practices serial killer eyes for this episode because I swear he spends so many scenes with just like that low voice or just like looking up at someone going rah, 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 rah. You will do what I tell you to do. I will use my Jedi mind tricks on you.
Yeah, it's kind of grim. And then he's just shitty to Scott. No, it's to Styles. Scott is shitty to Styles.
He's an absolute ass to Styles. Just being like, yeah, Lydia likes you.
The song in that episode, in that scene, sorry, though, ends on the line of like, karma's a bitch, which is some pretty intense foreshadowing.
Yeah.
I have like no notes for the lacrosse scene, aside from the fact that it's just like ramping up like aggression and everything and whatever.
Is this almost played for just, I don't know, Scott letting off how grumpy and aggressive and angry he is?
Yeah, he's just like kind of clearly losing a grip on reality.
Himself is probably a better word to use.
Because he basically just goes like all werewolf on
everyone
on these defenders, and then he smacks Danny in the face, and messes him up a bit, and it's clearly the line too far. He's taking it too far because, as Styles says, it's like, everybody loves Danny.
Yeah.
I guess you also get the sense that, like, Scott just, like, doesn't give a shit about anything in this sort of state of mind that he's in.
Don't give a care about anyone.
And you also like get that interaction between Jackson and Lydia where Lydia has not fixed her lipstick before coming back to see Jackson. So that's how Stiles finds out, and also how Jackson finds out about the kissing.
Yeah. Which I thought, I suppose that's good observation on both of their senses.
Yeah, and like completely intentional on Lydia's part. You don't get the sense that like her character would just accidentally leave like that situation without checking her makeup and stuff. Yeah.
This kind of happens for the rest of this episode, right? Where we get Allison going down an independent streak, trying to defend herself and decide how she's going to look after herself without having to need Scott or anyone else, right? So we get the scene of Kate showing Allison how to use a taser on her childhood bear, which
it's kind of savage.
Yeah, I'm like, couldn't you have used something else on Mr. Bear?
Yeah, she called it Mr. Bear.
Mr. Bear looks very cute. But we do get to see that Allison is broken up about Scott, but still very resolute in her reasoning to do it. She just doesn't know what happened.
Yeah, well, like my sort of note thoughts on the scene was like, you're right, you do definitely get Allison kind of going on her own sort of path for a minute here, which is the one that Kate has been steering her into.
Yeah.
She's now primed to want to like have like the ability to protect herself, which is, I guess, why Kate's teaching her how to use the taser. And like Kate says to Allison, like, if you'd had this the other night, like, you would have been sorted, which then she like bursts into tears. And I'm trying to like remember if Allison, like, did Allison like lie to her family about the situation? Like, did she not mention that they broke up? Or I mean, I guess she did. Yeah, the scene ends up with like, I guess Allison, well, I guess Allison hasn't up until this point told her family that Scott knows Derek, or that she knows that Scott knows Derek.
Yeah.
Because this
information, is a revelation to Kate. That,
it lands with her spidey senses.
Yeah. That Derek and Scott know each other. This is where we get more information on how... Yeah, this is where we get Kate, and then because of Kate, we get... We get Chris starting to think maybe Scott could be the third little werewolf, as Chris calls it later on, that he saw when Chris first shot a werewolf in the first episode. Yeah, so they all start linking it all together, what it all could mean.
Yeah, the pieces of the puzzle are starting to fall into place for Kate. We then cut into Stiles letting himself into Scott's house with a key.
Which Scott's mother is slightly freaked out about.
Yeah. Yeah. I love their relationship. It's great.
Yep. I feel like Scott's mother always has the appropriate reaction to everything. It's kind of
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. But like Melissa at least knows, well, I was like, one, at least Melissa is like clued in enough to know that like something is kind of up with Scott.
Yeah.
And it's nice that she knows that she can like ask Styles to
Yeah.
make sure that like he's at least Scott's at least letting someone in. Even though he's not really, but
Yeah, she's giving him space to process his thoughts and feelings, and she is giving him that space to do it with who he needs to do it with. But she will still be the inquisitive mother who will try and find out what is happening with her son.
Yeah, she's still like checking in.
Yeah, exactly.
I did chuckle at that like little fake out that happens where Styles is like, "Be careful tonight," and Melissa's like, "Yeah, you too." And she says, like, you know, because of the full moon, and Styles is like, "Wait, what? Like, do
you,
you
know
know
about the full moon?
It's like,
You've been looking at, I don't know, what do you even look at for a full moon? Like a lunar calendar?"
I don't know. I do believe that like nurses probably do have a superstition about full moons bringing out the wild in people.
All the silly.
Yeah, bringing out all the bad decisions. I don't know if the etymology factoid that she dumps in there though is correct. It probably is.
Yeah, that the word lunatic comes from the full moon.
Yeah,
possibly. That makes sense. It's a nice idea for the episode, at least.
When Styles lets himself into Scott's room, Scott is like straight up mimicking like Derek's previous position from a previous episode, in just like kind of creepily like sitting in that armchair.
Yeah. Again, still pulling off his serial killer face, going like, "Yes, you have entered my domain. What do you
want?"
Somehow
Derek manages to like hit Broody. Scott's hitting like psychotic, like I'm gonna kill you vibes, and Derek at least it just looks like manages to hit like Broody, I'm fed up with this shit vibes. Like Derek for some reason never seems to stray into like serial killer vibes, although there is a moment at some point in the series, I won't say in which context to prevent spoilers, but there is a moment where Hecklin gets to go there.
Yeah.
And he is similarly psychotic. Yeah, basically Scott's sitting in there like in his room chilling like a, you know, a megalomaniac. That might not be the right word for it. A serial killer, an evil person, just all-around bad guy. And Styles comes into his room and is like, "Okay, are you ready? We're going to tie you up." And Scott is all just like, "I don't think I need to do that. I'm just going to lock the door, go to bed. We'll be fine." So we know that he's making sound decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, because you didn't spend, was it at least the first couple of episodes, like just waking up in the woods and being like that in the middle of the night and
trying to attack your friends and worrying if you were going to cut your girlfriend up every time you hooked up.
Yeah.
All those things. Yes. Yes, yes. All very, it's all contributing to Scott sounding a bit unhinged.
I really don't know where Scott's mood comes from this episode, because I mean, is this all just meant to be him being moody about Allison?
Yeah, it's like kind of like a combination of him being moody about Allison, and then also I guess you're meant to believe the full moon.
Yeah.
So
it's confusing.
Yeah, it's like, I guess you can just tell us that, like, tell the audience that, like, the full moon has these slightly psychotic side effects. But you already know from, like, you know, we've seen Derek on a full moon, and Derek is able to, like, act like
control
his
himself.
Regular self. And so I guess you can infer that because, like, Scott's only grasp on his sense of self was linked to Allison, that now that that relationship is, like, damaged, that he no longer, like, has a sense of self, which is why it's a bad idea that, like, he made her his anchor. And
Which is reinforced multiple times in this episode. It's like, Allison was Scott's anchor, and he lost his anchor and is now kind of losing it because he has lost his anchor.
Yeah. So I guess what the, like, this is telling us is that, like, werewolves without an anchor are basically just, like, subject to whatever force the full moon has on them.
Yeah.
And that is apparently serial killer tendencies. Because even Styles says it. He says he's got a serial killer face going on.
Yeah. So it was definitely, so that look was definitely played on purpose. And, like, Scott's entire vibe of just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
horribleness.
Like, played on the page. Played on the page as well. Or probably it was on the page in some way, and not just like a creative choice on the actor's part. I mean, Styles is still kind of playing a long game with Scott here, because, like, we know that he knows about the Lydia thing, but Scott doesn't know yet. I mean, Scott has, like, a pretty adverse response to the concept of Styles tying him up with chains, which is why Styles comes in with the sneak attack and handcuffs him to the radiator.
Yeah, which I found very amusing.
Yeah.
And then,
which, like, werewolf strength is still so, like,
oh, yeah. So, you wouldn't have expected Styles to have been able to do that, but apparently.
Well, I guess maybe with enough, like, momentum, then, yeah, sure, Styles can do that. But, like, wouldn't Scott just be able to break straight out of them?
I mean, we do get that later on, but.
You do, but he has to, like, fight for it. Like, he has to put some struggle into, like, busting them open. But, like, I don't know. Handcuffs are only engineered to keep humans in them. So you'd think that he'd be able to, like, I don't know. It kind of, like, just doesn't, like, track 100%, but I suppose you need to, I suppose if Scott busted the handcuffs, like, straight away, it would have kind of, like, changed the vibes quite a bit. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose they're still metal, so they're still, like, difficult to break. They're probably going to bend before they actually break.
Yeah, that's true. You get, like, another scene of, like, Allison accidentally bumping into Jackson in, like, the sporting goods store.
Yeah.
And you see her looking like, a scope.
This was my second piece of evidence that she's, like, thinking of being a bit more independent and taking up archery again and things like that.
Yeah, she's just going back to her own roots. I think I was wrong in the last episode of the podcast where I said I knew the song. I think this is the song that I knew. Let me see if I'm right. Yeah, it's the William Fitzsimmons. That was the artist I was thinking about. I was like, he's like the ultimate breakup song guy. Like, all of his songs are like breakup songs.
Well, that's definitely still the vibes Allison is going with.
His song after all, is used in like the very last episode of Greek, and it's like a 7 minute long song. They're like only the lyric, the main lyric is just like the word after all. That was a good jam, but like it's 7 minutes long.
Yeah. Slightly amazing.
But yeah, you just get like more Allison and Jackson linking up, and I'm kind of fed up with that.
Yeah. The next scene we get is very cute because Scott had mentioned that he didn't like Styles treating him like a dog. And then we get Styles come out with a pole that he's written Scott on to give him some water.
A literal dog bowl. And he's like, he sort of reveals to Scott that he knows that Scott hooked up with Lydia.
Yeah.
And is like, you know, serious violation of friendship here.
I was very amused by the comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty vindictive. Like, I think Styles is operating from like a pretty
nasty
place there.
It's definitely vindictive. Yeah, I don't know how much of it's played for comedy or whatnot, but yeah, from a good friend perspective, no, it's not good at all. But I enjoyed the laugh out of it.
Yeah, and like Styles is at least like as vindictive as he is being, and I guess the reason I say like that everyone is a piece of shit and includes Styles in that category is because Styles even lays out
as because of this.
It's like Styles lays out the reasons why he thinks he knows that Scott is not himself, and you know, he like, you know, says like the full moon, he's not gonna possibly even remember the next day because he'll have like a full moon hangover or whatever. But you know, Scott just drives the knife deeper and is like you know, I didn't even intend to kiss like Lydia or whatever, like it was her kissing me kind of thing, which is just like deeply solidifying the fact that like Styles doesn't have isn't even on Lydia's radar, not even to manipulate or get back at Jackson for, like, you know, he doesn't, it's not just that like Lydia could have done that with anyone to get back at Jackson, like Styles wasn't even on her radar to do that.
Styles is literally just not cool enough, apparently.
Yeah.
And then he continues with that dialogue by torturing Styles over that point. Everyone is really being an ass to everybody else in this episode.
It's like super dark, the way that Scott goes, because he basically is just like Lydia came on to me and she would have done anything I wanted, which is just like a disgusting like power move. Like,
I know,
one to even like think that, like, I mean, I guess Scott wasn't cognizant enough to like realize that Lydia was playing her own angle in that situation. I guess maybe because he's operating on these like whatever baser instincts, but yeah, it was like pretty gross, like, and I don't know how easily you could get away with doing that in this kind of TV show without like one of the characters pointing out that it's gross or something. Like, it's like kind of strays a little too far into like the rapey dialogue. Like just like real disgusting, like frat bro type.
And Styles just completely loses it and goes around the corner and just goes like, oh yeah, this I don't know, tries and tells himself that this is all because of the full moon or something, and just is like,
Styles Styles is definitely
Why am I putting up with this?
He's definitely being hurt by the information.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, we get that exterior shot of the full moon over the house, or starting to come out from the clouds over the house to remind us that, I guess this is full moon, Scott. And we cut into a scene with Allison and Jackson, this time in a minivan instead of the Porsche.
Yeah.
Which I didn't moderately confused by.
Same. I was like, where did this minivan come from? But we do find out later on that it's apparently just another vehicle at Jackson's house.
I kind of wonder if it's not. Because why would Jackson's parents have a minivan? He's an only child.
Yeah.
So why would they have like this giant minivan car? So maybe the situation, like with the Porsche, how the Porsche is on loan from the director or like one of the directors and EPs or whatever. Maybe the minivan was like,
a vehicle that was there today.
It was a vehicle that was there. Maybe it was productions or transports or whatever. Like, it was just an available vehicle, and they were like, "Fuck it, Jackson's parents can drive a minivan."
I'll be interested to see if we see it again. Yeah. Although, looking at it, would you call it a mini? It does sort of look more elongated and minivan-like, but would call it that or like an SUV? But yeah.
No, I mean, to me it looks like a minivan, but
yeah.
Kind of looks like one of those Kia Caravelle things.
Yeah.
Or Carnival, whatever the fuck the name is.
I think it has a Ford logo on the front of it, but yeah. I just wondered
maybe
where
it's
it
like
came from.
Escalade or something, I don't know. I mean, Scott's just being a piece of shit, so I don't feel like
we need to discuss
Scott continuing to be a piece of shit and trying to blackmail Styles into letting him free, because ultimately Scott changes and I'm skipping.
Yeah.
Can I keep skipping?
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about this.
Ultimately, Scott gets out of the handcuffs and my literal only note for that scene is how did Styles think one handcuff would hold a werewolf? But anyway.
This is the thing. How did he not have like at least multiple handcuffs?
Come up with a backup plan. He needs Kate's cattle prod.
I mean, he had the chains as well. So it's like once he had Styles attached to the radiator with
Scott.
Once Styles had Scott attached to the radiator with handcuffs, why couldn't he use his chain that he also brought in his bag to double up the handcuffs? But no, he decided that only one handcuff would be enough to hold Scott to the radiator.
Yeah, it's poor decision making on Styles' part. That scene is intercutting with the scene with Jackson and Lydia in the Jackson and Allison, sorry, in the minivan. And my only real note for like the Allison and Jackson stuff, aside from why Jackson's driving a minivan, is there any reason other than possible intuition for Allison to believe that it wasn't Derek in the school? Because she basically says to Jackson in that scene, like, can I tell you a secret? I don't think it was Derek. I think we're being lied to. And Jackson's like, I don't think it was Derek either. And like, obviously Jackson has a reason to possibly keep being suspicious because he's suspicious of Scott and has been the longest.
Jackson also has his like previous experience with the Alpha and things like that. But I also don't know why Jackson's previous experience with the Alpha couldn't have been Derek, because he has had his experience with like Derek antagonizing him and literally scratching him on the back of his neck and things like that. And it's like, yeah, so I don't exactly know where it's coming from either. Maybe Allison just has a really good meter for bullshit.
Maybe.
Was about all I wrote about it.
I mean, also, like, Jackson could also just be agreeing with Allison to get her to keep talking.
True.
Whether or not he believed it or not. But, yeah, I guess Allison has been feeling like everyone is lying to her. And then she did say, I guess, in the school that, like, she felt like Scott wasn't telling them the full picture. So maybe it's just like a case of like it's not that she literally doesn't, or not that she doesn't, like, it's not that she couldn't believe that it was Derek. It's more just that she feels like she's being lied to, so she has no confidence in trusting people.
Yeah.
That's like the only place that I could come at it from, because otherwise, if you take it on like a face value thing, like, she has no reason to believe that it wasn't Derek. Like, she has no supernatural experience aside from that one.
Yeah.
She's not encountered like really, she's not really had any like narrow misses with werewolves yet. All of those things, like, really, it's just like being fed in from her being lied to, or feeling like she's being lied to.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, but yeah, it's maybe just she's feeling very lied to at the moment.
Yeah.
She's still hanging on to those vibes of feeling like Scott is not telling her the whole truth, or anything like that.
Yeah, and I guess like Jackson is playing into the same sort of like vulnerability that she has, or manipulating the same vulnerability that Allison has, that Kate is doing, even by literally saying, like, just because you don't trust, you know, your parents or Scott, like, doesn't mean you can't trust anyone. You can trust me.
Yeah.
Type thing. Allison says in that scene, you know, she recognizes that it's like not exactly normal that she comes home to a garage full of weaponry. But Jackson has no reaction to that. So I'm like, have they discussed this previously, or is this just like a totally socially acceptable thing?
He's just accepted that as who she is, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just a random side.
Maybe it's just his whole thing of, yeah, maybe trying to continue to manipulate her or something like that. It's just like, oh, yeah, I can accept that. That's fine.
Yeah, or he's just like filtering out information that's not relevant to him.
Yeah, relevant or important. She really, with that dialogue, she really feel, or it seems like she really feels that, yeah, everyone is truly lying to her, because she's like, yeah, I feel that, that she feels that her father is not telling her the whole truth as to what happened in that school. She feels like Scott is not telling her the whole truth. So she's really like, no one is telling me the truth about anything.
The lies are all around.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott has, in this time, breaks out of his one-man handcuffed thing and takes off running into the woods.
We do get Jackson revealing to Allison what he thinks that he might have seen, and his experience of... when they were trapped in school, which...
Oh, yeah. And she kind of, like, latches onto it almost.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, oh, my God, someone is actually, like, almost corroborating with, these ideas that I have. And it's like, I might actually not be entirely delusional. And, it might be slightly valid, these feelings that I'm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, if only she looked up, because or around the car park, because I mean, Scott's basically proving that he's unhinged because he's basically run through the woods and is now stalking Allison.
I think she's just focusing on this conversation she's having with Jackson.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I guess you're like meant to believe that, like, because Scott in his red vision, his nighttime vision, sees Allison and Jackson like seriously hooking up.
Yeah.
So I guess you're meant to believe that like the full moon just makes them fully irrational.
Yeah.
Because yeah, he basically like jumps on the minivan. And is, I guess, basically about to rip Jackson through the roof.
Yeah.
When he gets a flying dive tackle and Derek's back.
Yeah. This is the first time we get to see Derek since he had a hole put through his chest.
Yeah. So in the last 5 minutes of the episode, Derek is back.
Yeah.
I guess it must have been, maybe Hicklin was busy or something. And they had to write. He's basically, he can't have been in any more than like two or three pages. Maybe 5 to 6 pages of this episode.
The fact that he's still all in wolf makeup, at least here for these scenes, we do get to see him transform back in a minute. But like that could have easily been a stunt double for this stuff.
He's probably just in for like one or two nights. Probably one night.
Yeah.
And yeah, him and Derek and Scott have like a bit of a fight.
He's like, calm down, control yourself.
Yeah, Scott's just like acting from pure rage, which allows Derek to take him down pretty succinctly. With some quality WWE moves. Until like Derek just like roars in his face. And that's apparently enough to get him to change
back. Scott back down to earth, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just cheaper for them to do, or I suppose they've done Scott's transformations without him having to be in shadow.
Yeah.
But with Derek's ones, they tend to do it like in somewhere they can mask it, like somehow
cheaper for a, maybe someone they can, who's not a main character.
Well, yeah, maybe they can only afford one of those.
Yeah,
and so the rest they have to do it as a mask.
Yeah,
because
we've talked about that before when we saw Derek change in his house, Transformers house. When
yeah, well, I was wondering I was wondering if it was like a stylistic choice and like it was an active choice to have him have those shifts happen through something, or like, yeah, you know, be it the pane of glass or the shadow, or if it was a money saving thing. I couldn't decide, because I guess because it only happens with Derek, then maybe it could be a stylistic thing.
I mean, it could always just be both,
to like add to his mystery or intrigue or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
could be both. Scott eventually comes around enough to realize that something's happening to him, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I guess Derek's the guy with the answers. We then
being like, the Alpha wanted you to go on this, like, to go against your friends and go and try and kill them all? Like, yeah.
Yeah. We then cut to like, I guess Styles is like, you know, assuming responsibility for Scott because he's out in his Jeep, presumably searching for him. Yeah. When he stumbles across he stumbles across the police and EMTs finding the victim from the start of the episode. Yeah. But he's like super concerned that it's his father for a second there, and I was. Yeah, my only note for that is like Styles and Sheriff are tugging at all the heartstrings.
Yeah.
Like Styles has had like a pretty high stress night. Like he's just like
super. I hope Scott has not gone after my father or something like that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, no, he sees the burn marks, which, yeah.
It's just like, oh, thank God you are not the charred human.
And then I just have noted here that Kate and Chris are creeping around, working out what the police are doing.
Yeah, like, in a way, Kate is manipulating Chris as well. Like, she's, like, using his need to keep Allison safe to sort of, like, move him into these... To move him into this position where he's going to, where he's prepared to cross a line that previously he hasn't crossed. Like, you know, Chris is like the guy that's by the code. He's playing by a playbook, or by a rule book. And previously that meant no children. But now Kate seemingly has no such qualms, and is sort of like trying to lure Chris over to the dark side to.
Yeah, well, that's how I saw that when in that first scene in this episode, we saw them together in their SUV dropping Allison off at school. Yeah, it was Kate going, okay, Chris, you're going to listen to me now because you're agreeing with my opinions. And
super evil like BBC that. Voice.
Yes, 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 absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, that's where the Kate draws the connection between maybe the smaller Beta was not only smaller but also younger. Mm. Although I didn't really know why she drew that connection while looking at Styles.
That's a very good question.
Or why they were using Styles to draw that connection, like, unless it's like kind of a fake out, but
or just the conversation just came up then. Or yeah.
It makes sense that they're out, like, driving around trying to, like, I guess maybe patrolling. Like, it would make sense that maybe they run, like, some kind of patrols on the full moon or whatever, so.
Well, they were planning on trying to catch werewolves the full moon, remember? Because when they were meant to be more vulnerable, apparently that hasn't gone so well. But I don't know.
Does that mean so badly that they haven't even tried?
I mean, does that mean they're more sort of in the loop with what the police are doing too? Because they've got these people who are both werewolf hunters, but also in the police force, looping them in on what's happening. But yeah, as to why Kate decides to bring up that that the second werewolf. That Chris saw in the first episode, could they have been younger as well, not just smaller? As to why this is happening in front of Styles and whatnot, I don't exactly know. I mean, Kate is just found out from Allison that that Scott knows Derek, so it's like, has she pieced together that Scott is the other werewolf? But she's, at least that we've seen, not told this to Chris. So
yeah. Well, it would make more sense for her to, like, have that conversation with Chris looking at Scott.
Yeah.
To me, it just didn't make sense that, like, she was having that conversation looking at Styles.
Yeah.
I
mean, it could have just, because what that. That conversation with Allison came up the same day, so it's just that when she's decided to dump this on Chris. But I don't know. It's still, as you say, it doesn't make sense while they're right in front of Styles. If anything, you're going to talk about that on the drive there or something like that.
Yeah, they could have driven by his house or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because they had that reverse shot as well where, like, it wasn't that you could just see that they were out driving and, like, this activity was happening in the background, so maybe they were just, like, listening to police scanners or something and checking out what was going on And so they decided to drive by and check in on this. And then, like, Styles happened to be there. Like, I guess that would have made sense if Styles just happened to be in the background of their coverage. But then they do the reverse shot on, like, so you where you can see the sheriff and Styles sort of, like, hugging it out and talking from, like, a quite a wide angle. So it's like, I don't know, that's, like, the shot that made me question it and be like,
it's a very strange choice why? For that dialogue.
Yeah, it's like Styles' name just, like, hasn't been brought up as a potential werewolf at all.
No.
But yes, I mean, that aside, weird shot choices aside.
We get Derek bringing Scott home.
Yeah, Derek brings Scott home and, like, he's kind of, like, being, like, a nice person in this scene because he's, like, physically supporting Scott. You know, he's like, he's stopped Scott from killing Allison or Jackson or both. Yeah. He's, like, brought him home, is physically supporting him, drops him on his bed. And then he just, like, I love that, like, awkward look of, like, well, I don't know what to do here, so I guess I'll just turn around and leave.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
You are home now.
I think it might be, like, the first, like, vulnerable kind of expression that Derek has, like, had in the presence of Scott.
Maybe Derek getting stabbed through the chest has caused some change in his mindset.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
And Scott sort of, like, but, like, Scott stops Derek from leaving and has his whole, like, I definitely can't do this, you know, please tell me there's a cure type thing. And I was trying to decide if, I mean, yeah, I was trying to decide if you're meant to think that Derek is manipulating Scott here, or if you're meant to think that he's a good guy and just passing on whatever information he knows.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I, what I did write for this scene was, yeah, is that ever turn out to be true or come up again or anything like that? Like, that there is a cure for a bite? Like,
yeah.
I don't think it does or is. Or is, yeah, justified again in any kind of way. So, yeah, maybe it is just manipulation.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of hard to tell, because this is kind of, like, the least sort of, like, this is, like, I guess the softest you've seen Derek. Not that soft is, like, the right word for it, but he just kind of seems like
he's genuinely trying to help.
Scott, well, he just seems, like, slightly more like, it seems slightly more like Scott and Derek are on equal footing in this particular moment. So it's hard to tell. But yeah, he tells Scott that the only way that he has ever heard of is if Scott kills the one that bit him. So that's not an insurmountable task for the rest of the season, right? Scott just has to kill the alpha.
Yeah. And then him and Allison can live happily ever after.
Yeah, sounds like quite a task. I'd just, you know, get on Tinder, Scott. Keep trying. I mean, I suppose, yeah, Scott is, like, rightfully, like, seriously. And, yeah. Derek does kind of take the opportunity to be, like, recruit Scott for his own agenda.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of been his whole thing, though, this season as well? That he just needs Scott's help to catch the alpha and kill it. Because that's been his whole thing ever since his sister died, right? And he knew that Scott was part of the alpha's pack, or going to be part of the alpha's pack, and all the alpha would want Scott as part of his pack because the alpha bit Scott. And I kind of just think that's a continuation of that. But it really reinforces the point, and which is, yes, good to see.
Well, I mean, at least Derek's communicating better in this moment.
This is true.
He's sort of just, you know, he's presenting the information he knows, and he's asking for what he wants.
Yeah.
like rather I said, than just like talking, these two talking at each other a lot.
Like I said, being stabbed through the chest by the alpha has possibly changed Derek's perspective a bit, and
yeah,
wants to wants to make him talk a little bit more and communicate a bit more.
He is looking a little rough, so maybe he maybe he's still feeling it.
Besides that, he might need a bit more help or something like that.
Yeah. And this episode closes out on this like hilltop view of Beacon Hills, where the Alpha's like walking up to the viewpoint, looking over the town, and you see him like go all bipedal and turn back into a human. So now you like also know that the Alpha has a human form, even though I guess that was supposed by the fact that he was, you know, he's playing some pretty severe mental games last episode. You now see that he also has a physical form.
Yeah.
That could be anyone. Although it does not look like Deaton. Oh, and I was wrong. That's not what the episode closes out on. The episode closes out on Jackson parking up his parents' minivan thing.
And finding a floor in the minivan, which I don't know how it got stuck there, but anyway.
Yeah, Scott must have been
stuck in the trim of the door or something.
Slashing wildly or something. Yeah, my note for this ending scene is just like, look at Jackson being all Sherlock Holmes.
I know.
Although I'd like to know what his first, like, what conclusion he first jumps to, because I guess he does figure out that, like, that's not a normal fingernail, so, and he draws the connection to Scott's glove, which he's held on to since, like, episode one or two. Yeah. But it's like, what does he think Scott is? Aside from desperately in need of a manicure.
So, so Scott told Jackson that he could see, hear, and smell things that he's never been able to see, hear, or smell before.
That's true.
In the first episode, but yeah, it's almost as if Jackson needs to do some of Styles' Google foo again to try and work out what that might be, because he definitely has enough evidence here.
Jackson needs his own Bella Swan research montage.
He does.
Everyone needs their own Bella Swan research montage.
Absolutely.
I mean, Styles has his very like accurate to Bella Swan's experience research montage. Allison does her own like little more like physical books Bella Swan research montage, and yeah, I guess Jackson's just straight jumping to conclusions.
Jackson just needs his own.
Yeah.
Be interesting to know really what Jackson would be thinking at this point. With any luck, we might find out in the next episode.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but my thing with Teen Wolf is I can never remember what happens in the next episode.
Neither. completely lost.
Even if it just happened, I can tell you what happens in like each individual episode of season one of Grey's Anatomy, which I haven't seen for like years and years and years. But for some reason, I still remember like every beat that happens in every single episode, basically. I've watched episode 9, like, I don't know, less than a week ago, and I still can't remember off the top of my head what happens in it.
I seem to have erased at least a lot of season 1 from my mind. I think I remember more of season 2 than I remember of season 1.
Yeah. Well, I know which parts of Teen Wolf I can always remember, but
yeah. Episode 1 has stuck in my head pretty well, but other than that.
Yeah, same. Oh, dear. Oh, well. I guess that's a wrap on this week's episode of Teen Wolf Unpacked. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed talking about werewolves for an hour. If you would like to follow us on the social medias, you can find us at TW Unpacked Pod on Twitter. at twunpacked_pod on Instagram, or you can email us at teenwolfunpackedpod@gmail.com. Until next time, folks, I should stop saying stay howling.
Woo!
If I howled right now, my dog would go apeshit. He might howl back, I suppose. I mean, that would be pretty funny, but yeah. Bye.
Bye.